Welcome to Blue Dot, a look at our place in space. I'm Dave Schlone. In this program, we'll visit with some folks from one of the most beautiful parts of the state of California, the Northern Coast. And we're going to find out about the marine sciences programs there, some of the best in the nation, at the newly designated Cal Poly Humboldt, formerly known as Humboldt State University. Later on in the show, we'll visit with University Provost Jen Kapp to find out more about the name change and what it means for both students and the Arcata-based campus. But first, we're going a few miles north to the beautiful seaside town of Trinidad, home base for Cal Poly Humboldt's marine biology and oceanography programs and the Telonica Marine Lab, home port for the research vessel Coral Sea. Our guests are Professors Rick Zechman and Sean Craig, along with one of their students, Joey LaFuente. I asked them to briefly introduce themselves before we took a deep dive into the oceanic science programs at Cal Poly Humboldt.
Hi, Dave. It's great to be with you today. I am the Associate Dean for Marine Operations at Cal Poly Humboldt and work within the College of Natural Resources and Sciences. And as such, I serve as the director of the Telonica Marine Lab and our 90-foot research vessel, the RV Coral Sea.
And Sean, Craig, what about you?
Yeah, hello. I'm a professor of marine biology and zoology at Humboldt, Cal Poly Humboldt. And I do research with undergraduate students. I do research with graduate students, and I teach a number of classes. And I've been quite involved with the development of our new marine biology major.
And Joey LaFuente, how about you?
Yeah. Hi, my name is Joey LaFuente, and I am a fisheries biology graduate student working with Dr. Eric Bjorkstad.
One of the great lines for real estate is location, location, location. And I've always admired the location of Humboldt there and your marine biology department there in Trinidad is just what a spectacular part of the California coast. Tell us a bit about how that location impacts your both your facilities and what you can offer to students.
Well, I think this is really the basis for the history of the Marine Lab and why the Marine Lab is here in the first place. We're really the only Marine Lab between San Francisco Bay and Coos Bay, Oregon. And it covers a huge stretch of coastline, largely understudied, but with a vast diversity of different pristine and very unique marine habitats. So we have everything from sandy beaches, rocky intertidal zones, kelp forests, deep offshore reefs, and submarine canyons. We have estuarine lagoons, and of course, we have Humboldt Bay, which is the most pristine estuary in California and is home to a large portion of the California oyster industry. So there's a gazillion reasons why a marine lab in this area is useful and in terms of integrating this beautiful and unique pristine coastline, but also many of the opportunities that the coastal marine environment brings to communities and people living and working in this area.
Sean?
Yeah, let me add to that. That's a wonderful answer, Rick. And I think it's really very fortunate that we have this marine lab here right in Trinidad. It's a fabulous place where students can learn hands-on, right? And they can do science, right? Which is really exciting. You know, when I walk into the marine lab and I run into Juhi, for example, working away in the wet lab, I think to myself, well, a student here, a graduate student like Juhi, or even an undergraduate, could be sitting in class on our main campus, right? And they could hop in their car and about 25 minutes later, they would be at our marine lab, and then they could check on their experiments. So unlike many places where the marine laboratory is quite a long distance away, and one has to drive for hours, if not get on a ferry or something to get out, we have a marine lab that's within striking distance of campus, which allows us to have, you know, live laboratory experiences right down the street, more or less, so to speak, from our main campus. I can literally have a lecture in the morning with students learning about a particular group of animals, maybe maybe sea urchins, for example. And then that same afternoon, we can be at the marine lab, everybody holding a sea urchin in their hands, watching them move in an aquarium right there in the laboratory. So it doesn't get any better than that, I think, in terms of learning and teaching and, again, doing research. And I'll let Juhi kind of jump in there with that latter point.
Yeah, so this is Juhi. So the marine lab to me seems like a melting pot of marine science. It's not just the one department that has space here. There's multiple departments. There's the fisheries biology department, and the biology department. And there's so many different types of research going on. And that kind of echoes the different environments that Rick was talking about. There's so many different opportunities and different research projects that are happening here. And it's all within, you know, this building. And I interact with those people on a daily basis. And we talk and we're all doing different things, but it's all centered around research in this region, which I think is really special to be able to live and work and study a specific region versus being at a university and having a field site, you know, across the globe. I really like that the research I'm doing here, I can directly apply to this area, and I can look out and see where I collect my krill from, for example, just from the marine lab, because the view is breathtaking. And I constantly am pinching myself that I get to live and work in such a beautiful place.
Juhi, I'd like to know, where did you go to high school, and what led you, how and why did you decide to go to Humboldt?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so I grew up on the Olympic Peninsula in Washington State, and I went to, I'm from Port Townsend, so Port Townsend High School. I was always interested in marine science as a kid and really actively started volunteering at my local marine science center. And from there, I went on to do my undergraduate degree at Western Washington University, majoring in environmental science with a marine ecology emphasis. And continued after undergrad. I knew I wanted to go to grad school eventually. I just didn't know what discipline, what exactly I wanted to do within marine science. There's so many different options. So I continued through and did a variety of AmeriCorps programs, which allowed me to gain really great hands-on experience. And I really dialed in on wanting to do oceanographic research specifically with zooplankton. And lo and behold, a funded position was advertised here about a little over a year ago for a graduate student. And I knew that my experiences that I had had thus far were direct. It was directly in line with my experiences and my research interests. And I was able to contact the PI, Eric Bjorkstead, and get in touch with him. And almost a year later, here I am.
And since you've been there now, what do you think about that place? Do you feel like, wow, I'm in the perfect place for me?
I am in the perfect place for me. Absolutely.
Sounds like it.
Yeah, one thing that I really benefited from taking about 5 years between my undergrad and graduate degree was really just dialing in on what I wanted to do. And this is exactly what I want to be doing, oceanographic research, specifically with zooplankton. But yes, absolutely exactly where I want to be. And just there's just great opportunities here for marine research.
Yeah. Well, Rick and Sean, could you kind of walk us through what the basic programs are? Because you have marine biology and oceanography and fisheries that Juhi is a part of. Could you just kind of walk us through the major components of your programs there?
Yeah, we have undergraduate programs that utilize the marine lab for majors in our new Bachelor of Science in Marine Biology, which will be starting this fall. And Sean can tell you a little bit more about that. We have a Bachelor of Science in Fisheries Biology and Bachelor of Science in Oceanography. And all of the Fisheries Biology program and the Marine Biology programs each have graduate degrees that also utilize the lab. And, you know, as far as infrastructure to support these programs, we have two fully equipped classrooms. One is equipped with flowing seawater. We have a wet lab that Sean mentioned earlier, which is a large room with lots of sea tables that have that are plumbed with chilled and filtered flowing seawater. So students can conduct experiments with live organisms right here in the lab after they've collected them right outside our front door, literally. And it's just a fantastic setup for opportunities in research and teaching for faculty and students at Cal Poly Humboldt. And I'll let Sean fill in some of the other details.
Sure, thanks. Yeah, no, we've got a wealth of programs here, especially on the undergraduate end of things. So when Rick mentions these different programs, you know, we have an oceanography major, which is one of the very few in the country, and literally has this 91-foot research vessel that students can cruise out on and take samples on. We have ongoing research, too, at our marine lab, led by Eric Bjorkstead and others, Professor Bjorkstead, that is the advisor of Juhi LaFuente. And they're constantly going out offshore on transects to gather data, fundamental data, that our oceanography department at times can assist in and work on.
Sean, could you explain to us what the difference is between oceanography and marine biology?
Sure. I think in general, oceanographers are folks that look at the big picture. They tend to be ocean-going scientists looking at large factors like the chemistry of the ocean or the physical nature of the ocean, the physics of the ocean, sometimes the biological aspect of the ocean. But in that case, generally speaking, ocean-going changes in plankton or distribution of plankton and that sorts of thing. Marine biology tends to be a major and an emphasis that is more focused on nearshore, right along the coast, tends to look at nearshore marine animals in the intertidal zone, for example, or in kelp beds. And lastly, the fisheries major really is more of an applied area of science that focuses on populations of fishes and how to keep those, for example, commercial populations going and manage them and so on. So different emphases, all focusing on different aspects of the ocean.
I also saw that you have some kind of a program in teaching people that are students there about scientific diving. Could one of you explain that to me?
The scientific diving program is really, it's actually a minor that students can take. They can minor in scuba diving. And a student, as long as they can swim well enough, they can dive into our pool on campus. They can learn how to become a scuba diver in the introductory scuba diving course. And then they can take a series of courses, for example, on how to rescue others in trouble in the water. And then finally, how to collect data underwater. And that is the scientific diving course. The scientific diving course, once a student passes it and masters it, they can go on to do science underwater at any one of the many universities and institutions across the country that work on projects underwater. And one of those projects, for example, is a project that I have going with others. It's funded through the state of California to monitor marine protected areas and specifically to monitor kelp beds. And so how do you monitor kelp beds? Well, of course, you've got to get your scuba gear on and you strap your oxygen tank to your back and you've got to swim underwater and do things like census the abundance of kelp beds. And this is one of the major important areas that we need to focus on along our coast here in California, because kelp beds are currently in trouble in part due to marine heat waves that seem to be impacting them. And really a lot of the kelp beds in southern Humboldt and Sonoma and Mendocino counties have begun to disappear, really. There's been a remarkable loss of kelp beds along that stretch of coast. We're trying to understand further why that is and what we can do about it.
And is that, are you seeing signs of sea star collapse as part of that, the population of sea stars that feed on the urchins that tend to create those kelp barrens?
Exactly. Yeah. So part of the problem is that there was this sort of a perfect storm of events that happened around 2014, 2015, where a very warm mass of water, literally called the warm blob, came up along the coast. We saw a massive die-off of sea stars, one of which, the local sunflower star, Pictopodia helianthoides, has just really virtually disappeared from our area. And that species feeds on sea urchins. And then thirdly, we saw an explosion in the number of purple sea urchins, which naturally eat kelp beds. So these things are all involved, of course, in the disappearance of kelp beds. And it's a complex ecosystem like many others. So understanding what has happened and exactly how we can turn around the system is not a simple matter, but it obviously is important to all of those fishermen that harvest purple urchins, for example, or that harvest fishes that rely on kelp beds as nurseries.
Let's take a short break, but stay with us as we continue our look at the Marine Biology, Oceanography, and Fisheries Science programs at Cal Poly Humboldt. Stay with us. And we're back, and thanks for listening. Let's get back now to our conversation with Rick Zechman, Associate Dean of Marine Operations, Marine Biology Professor Sean Craig, and student researcher Jui LaFuente, as we talk about all things marine science at the newly renamed Cal Poly Humboldt. Okay, let's talk about one of the really amazing things that you have, which is the research vessel Coral Sea. So, Rick, tell us about the Coral Sea and it's a little bit of its history and what it provides for your students and staff.
Yeah, the Coral Sea is a 90-foot steel-hulled research vessel. It has a full-time permanent captain and crew as appropriate for any given mission. We run both academic cruises and cruises for hire, basically, by, you know, anyone who needs to utilize a research vessel, be it a government agency or a private entity. We make the vessel available for those folks as well, and that helps to support the academic mission and maintaining a research vessel of that size. I think it's pretty safe to say that there are very few, primarily undergraduate universities around the country with a 90-foot research vessel. And it's just a fantastic resource for the marine-related programs like oceanography, in particular, fisheries biology, marine biology, and to some extent, our wildlife programs here. The vessel has the capability to stay out at sea for multiple days, multiple weeks. It will sleep 15. Capabilities for hauling an amount of fresh water and food. We have quite a bit of oceanographic and fisheries related gear. An A-frame on the back of the vessel is capable of lifting significant weights and deploying gear packages off the stern. We also have a knuckle crane that is capable of deploying gear and moving gear around the deck. And it's just a wonderful resource to have access to for these marine related programs.
Juhi, have you been out on the Coral Sea?
Oh, yes. I go out on the Coral Sea monthly for long-term monitoring cruise called the Trinidad Headline, which is a part of NOAA. And we go out and monitor five stations off of Trinidad Head on the Coral Sea. These cruises happen at night because that is when we can collect zooplankton that are migrating up to the surface waters at night. So we head out there and it is a 12-hour ordeal. And I also use the Coral Sea for my own research to collect krill.
And how do you do that?
Yeah, so we use what is called a bongo net, which collects zooplankton. We tow this net alongside the boat in what is called an oblique tow. So it's about a 45 degree wire angle. We deploy down to depth and we slowly bring the net up in the water column to collect all of the plankton within the net. We have cod end jars or jars that we affix to the end of the net to help retain the animals that we collect. And then we actually do sorting of the krill on board the vessel before we transfer them into coolers, and eventually they end up back at the marine lab.
And what's the most interesting thing you've ever experienced out there at sea on the coral sea?
You know, I don't want to say seasickness, but I might say seasickness because it's a very interesting feeling to feel sick and also work to get the job done. And that is what I encountered on my last research cruise out there. It's a very interesting feeling, but you power through it and you get the job done. And regardless of the circumstances, it's still incredible that we're able to go out and collect data in Northern California. It's these conditions aren't ideal. And the fact that we have the coral sea allows us to collect the data.
All right. Well, let's talk some more about your location there, because also from an oceanography standpoint, you're at a really fascinating place on Earth, because you're right next to the Mendocino Triple Junction, where you have, you know, basically three plates coming together. Do you do much research out, you know, in that area?
Currently, there is not a full-time faculty member who studies geological oceanography. There are a number of folks with the USGS, however, who are very interested in this part of the coastline and studying plate tectonics and earthquakes. And we had a research cruise on the Coral Sea not too long ago with the USGS, where they were positioning transponders on either side of the Cascadia subduction zone, which is a rift that goes from about Bodega Bay up off the coast of Oregon, and I believe perhaps as far up as Washington. I'm not a geologist myself, but
yeah, it basically goes from right off the coast where you are up into just off the coast of Canada.
Yeah.
So it's huge.
Yeah. So anyway, they were interested in measuring very fine scale movements between the two sides of the Cascadia subduction zone, looking at an area off the coast of Crescent City, California. So, and you're right, this is a really interesting stretch of coastline. There are many unique oceanographic features, and that triple junctions area out there is cause for some interesting surprises often here and there, you know, as we feel the ground shake here in Humboldt County.
Yeah, you're in one of the most seismically active parts of California.
Yes.
It can be interesting, that's for sure. Yeah. And I think, Dave, this is one of those areas we're going to improve upon here with our new polytechnic designation. We'll be able to bring in a new faculty member in that geologic oceanography area. And that's an area that we had faculty in the past. So we're looking to restock, if you will, some of these faculty holes.
Yeah, well, let's also, I'd like to know about, from a student's perspective, what are some of the career pathways that they can go on after completing programs there? Because, you know, a lot of kids, when they're young, it's like, I want to be an astronaut. Being a marine biologist is one of those that you hear a lot with kids. But, you know, to actually be one and go into a program, you know, that takes a lot of effort and work. But once you accomplish that, tell us a bit about some of the job opportunities that are available for students at Cal Poly Humboldt.
I think the jobs are really much more broad than you think. You know, Cal Poly Humboldt graduates in marine science, broadly construed, so oceanography, marine biology, fisheries biology, they get jobs at National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. They get jobs at California Sea Grant, amongst other Sea Grant programs for states along the coast, such as Washington State or Oregon. They get jobs at aquaria, like the Monterey Bay Aquarium, for example, or the, you know, you name it, any aquarium in the nation probably has Cal Poly Humboldt graduates at them. They get jobs, you know, going on to do research. They get jobs as on fisheries commissions and as managers of different fish populations. Some of them go on to get graduate degrees and become professors. So there's a whole host of jobs, and I've just mentioned a few. The jobs in the future, of course, are oftentimes jobs that sometimes we sit and can only imagine, right? Given the fact that climate change is hitting pretty much all along our country now, but especially along the coasts. And so, you know, some of these folks are going to get hired to adapt local towns and cities to climate change, to adapt those, the infrastructure, for example, to rising sea levels and what have you. So that's just a sampling of a few kind of areas that our students get hired in.
Zoe, what do you want to do after you finish grad school?
So I would like to get a job as a research scientist working ideally for NOAA. I really like the ocean-going aspect of the work that I do now, and I would like to continue to do that in the future, whether it be through a long-term monitoring program or something to that effect. I would like to continue to do biological oceanography-related research.
One of the programs that we're really interested in expanding at Cal Poly Humboldt, and which I think goes very well with the polytechnic designation and being primarily an applied scientific area, is that of aquaculture. And we have an aquaculture scientist, Dr. Rafael Cuevas Uribe, in the fisheries biology department. He and I have a small grant from the Agricultural Research Initiative to look into experimental kelp farms and other seaweed farms here in Humboldt Bay. We've established the only state licensed open water seaweed farm in California. And we're currently growing bull kelp at that site, but we're also gonna start another project looking at different species of kelps that naturally occur in the region to see the potential for aquaculture, open water-based aquaculture in the region. It's also something that I would like to expand here at the Marine Lab in terms of looking at land-based aquaculture techniques and experimental aquaculture techniques. We're currently developing a nursery facility here for seeding line that is then subsequently deployed into the open water farm. They seed these lines with the spores of kelps, and then they grow up on those lines after they've been deployed. And the same technology can be applied to not only commercial aquaculture applications, but also for restoration aquaculture. So, for example, seeding artificial substrate or even natural substrate, and deploying that substrate into natural areas where the natural kelp populations have been devastated by urchin grazing.
And I'm also curious about, you do some really neat outreach programs for the public. Like you can come tour the marine laboratory. And what I saw that was really cool is you have a, you have like a marine science camp for kids, don't you?
Yeah, we have a number of summer programs for kids. We have school groups that come in. In particular, we have a program that hires Cal Poly Humboldt undergraduate students to become what we call marine naturalists. And the marine naturalists are the ones who interact with school groups. They run the summer programs here at the Marine Lab. And during one of these summer programs, the kids can look at the aquaria that are here on in the public displays in the main hallway of the Telonica Marine Lab. But they also utilize the classrooms and the take advantage of the flowing seawater and some of the microscopes. And those marine naturalists guide those activities for young kids. It's really a great program. Gives those folks in the marine naturalist program the experience working with kids, but also educating the public on pertinent issues in marine science and making the public aware of the special habitats that we have here in Humboldt County.
And what are some of the most common questions you get from the public, from people that come visit the lab?
Sean, you want to take that one?
Yeah, sure. I think one of the most common questions is about our octopus. We oftentimes have octopus on display, and more often than not, to be honest, they're fairly shy creatures. So usually people ask, well, where's the octopus? I don't see it. Is there really one in there? And sometimes those visitors can be really lucky. We'll say, well, hang on, it's feeding time. And our naturalists or the lab technicians at the Marine Lab that work there, who are also students, will come out and they'll feed the octopus and they'll drop a crab, sometimes a crab that's actually put in a jar with a screwed on lid, into the tank, and out comes the octopus. And, you know, it's really something incredible to watch an octopus unscrew the lid and reach in and grab the crab. And they're very, of course, very intelligent creatures and really amazing to watch. So that's a big attraction and, of course, a source of a lot of questions.
Oh, that's got to be fun.
A lot of fun. It's you know, it's one of the things everybody should do. Watch an octopus feed. They're fabulous creatures.
Let's take a short break, but stay with us when we come back. We'll continue our look at the marine sciences programs at Cal Poly Humboldt. I'm Dave Shlohm, and you are listening to Blue Dot. And we're back, and thanks for listening. Let's wrap up our conversation with Cal Poly Humboldt Director of Marine Operations Rick Zechman, Marine Biology Professor Sean Craig, and student researcher Jui LaFuente as we look at the marine sciences programs at Cal Poly Humboldt's Telonica Marine Biology Lab on California's north coast at Trinidad. And, you know, another interesting thing about your location and the ocean there is you have the California Current off our Northern California coast. Could you, for listeners that may not be really familiar with that, could you characterize what the California Current is and how it impacts both the ocean there and our climate?
Yeah, so the California Current is a really, the ecosystem in the California Current is really unique because it's such a highly productive area. And this high productivity is due to what is called upwelling, where deep nutrient-rich water is brought up from depth into the surface waters, which allows for more productivity. So more phytoplankton blooms, more zooplankton, more life in general. It's a really highly productive region, and that is due to the presence of the California Current off the coast here.
Okay, before we go, I'd like to ask each of you what it is that you love most about being there, about your work there and your location. What do you really love about being at Cal Poly Humboldt, especially the Marine Lab?
Well, the reason why I came to Cal Poly Humboldt was because of their strength in field-based instruction. And the mix of programs in the College of Natural Resources here that explore different aspects of organismal biology. Essentially, every one of our programs has someone involved in marine science, be it the chemistry department, the biology department, the fisheries biology department, the wildlife department, and certainly the oceanography department. There's a real richness of faculty expertise in the marine sciences in particular. And of course, you join that with the fact that we have these facilities, the Telonica Marine Lab and the RV Coral Sea, to support those programs. It's just a fantastic place to work. And of course, there is the pristine, unique environments that I talked about earlier that are literally right outside of our door here. You can go out the front door of the Marine Lab and walk 100 yards and you're in any number of different marine habitats that support the teaching and research mission of the university.
Anybody want to add to that?
Yeah, Dave, I'll add to that. It was a wonderful answer from Rick. And I think one of the things I love about Humboldt is the importance of teaching and excellence in teaching here. And I really appreciate that as somebody who's always had a love for teaching. I love the fact that our students are so engaged, so interested, so eager to get involved. It's, you know, they are very much a hands-on group. So we're not talking about a bunch of folks that want to learn online. We're awfully glad that's over and we can get back to the business of really having your hands and feet literally wet, sometimes all of you wet, in the water, right? Or underwater doing science. That's always exciting. And Rick touched on, you know, the breadth of our faculty interests. That is always something that keeps me interested too. I'm constantly looking for ways to collaborate with some of our own faculty in different areas that I'm not all that versed in, and therefore leverage their expertise to do unique kinds of science, which is fun. Yeah.
Juhi, tell us, do you have any really interesting experiences you'd like to share with us about being on the research vessel Coral Sea?
Yeah, I think every single time I go out there is a fairly interesting experience. And one of the things I love to do is after we collect and recover our zooplankton net, we get to see what we collected, what's inside for our samples. And I think it's just really incredible to see the diversity of zooplankton that are just in the waters off our coast here. It's not something that everyone gets to see, and I'm really fortunate to have the opportunity to experience that out on the Coral Sea.
Yeah, and Dave, let me just add to that. I am actually an invertebrate zoologist. So like Juhi, I study things like shrimp or krill or crabs or lobsters or what have you. But the thing that really blew me away is being out on the Coral Sea one day on a beautiful sunny day, nice calm seas, and all of a sudden the humpback whale is breaching right in front of the vessel, right near the entrance channel to Humboldt Bay. And, you know, we literally all stopped. We stopped the vessel and just watched and took in the awe of those animals. And I've got to say that is the huge advantage of being a student here, is to be able to be part of that. You know, to be able to literally observe nature happening out there live.
Yeah, humpback whales breaching in your classroom is pretty unique.
Yeah, it is. It really is. Yeah.
Okay, finally, Juhi, I'm going to put you on the spot here a little bit.
Okay.
For somebody listening out there right now who may be thinking about where to go to school and what they want to study, give us your best pitch for why they should come to Cal Poly Humboldt.
Yeah, so I think if you want a great hands-on field-based experience. I think Cal Poly's Humboldt is the place to be. We have great opportunities for students in marine science to really get their hands wet and really get their take their learning outdoors and have these experiences that will incredible experiences, but they also really carry you forward into your career, having these experiences just in terms of hands-on place-based learning. You can't beat the Northern California coastline.
Well,
I had one more thing to add.
Sure.
In context. So I work with Dr. Eric Bjorkstad, which he is an affiliate professor in the fisheries biology department. He's actually a research scientist who works with NOAA. So my project is funded through NOAA, through the Ocean Acidification Program there. And I also participate on a NOAA-funded cruise long-term monitoring with the Trinidad Headline. So there are opportunities for both graduate students and undergrad students within the departments here to interact and participate in NOAA-funded research, which I think is a really strong asset to have.
Juhi, could you tell us a bit about your experimental work on your research and your setup?
Yeah, so my setup involves 12 MOAPs, which are mobile ocean acidification testing systems. And they have the unique ability to each independently manipulate water chemistry, which is really useful when you're studying an organism like krill, because they do what is called a diel vertical migration, meaning they are lower in the water column at night and higher in the surface waters during the day. So they experience a suite of environmental changes in their water chemistry. And with my system, I'm able to mimic that and mimic the conditions that they would experience day versus night. But also, I'm able to manipulate water chemistry to mimic what projected conditions in the California Current from, 2050 to 2100, what we think the ocean chemistry is going to be like. We can expose critters, specifically krill, with my research to these conditions to see how their survival and growth will be impacted.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that sounds definitely important for this day and age. Well, I appreciate you guys' time and sharing with us about the marine lab there in Trinidad for Cal Poly Humboldt. So Rick Zechman and Sean Craig and graduate student Juhi LaFuente, thank you so much for sharing this with us, and best of luck as you get that grant money in and Cal Poly just gets better and better.
Thank you, Dave.
It was great to be with you, Dave. Thanks.
Yes, thanks for talking.
Thanks to our guests, Cal Poly Humboldt Director of Marine Operations Rick Zechman, Professor of Marine Biology Sean Craig, and student Juhi LaFuente. And finally, I wanted to find out more about what being a Cal Poly campus rather than a state university actually means. There are 3 Cal Poly campuses now, in San Luis Obispo, Pomona, and Humboldt. Joining us to talk about what's in the name is Provost and Vice President for Academic Affairs Jen Capps. Jen, welcome to Blue Dot.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Well, for most of us, we want to know what's in a name. What exactly does it mean to be a polytechnic institution?
Great question. It means a couple of different things. It means we're an institution that focuses on hands-on learning, that we really align our academic offerings with what the workforce needs. And we specialize in sort of 4 fields of study. So applied science, technology, and engineering, but we also make sure to let everybody know that we still continue to value and have strong offerings in liberal arts, humanities, and social sciences.
Yes, because I know there would be concern about that. It's not all just about STEM.
Exactly. Okay. That's not at all who Good. We are. We are a comprehensive polytechnic is what we like to say.
Yeah. Okay, well, when and how did this come about? Like, how long ago did this start to get in motion, and why? What was the decision behind this that you wanted to go in this direction?
Yeah, great question. I think there's been some wisdom at our campus and amongst folks for quite a long time thinking, wow, this university really has strong science offerings already. And so faculty, staff, leadership for I think a number of years have thought about this. But really, a couple of things happened. Our president really saw the wisdom in aligning and thinking about identifying more as a polytechnic and standing up more engineering and technology programs, and then leveraging the cool science and applied science programs that we already had. The reason why this was a good idea is because often engineering and technology programs are programs where lots of students want into them, but they become what's called impacted, or where students can't get into those programs. And what's interesting about that is that these are the very programs that have jobs where there's huge vacancies. So think of like cybersecurity or software engineering, those types of things. So students are dying to get into the programs, but they're full. And so in the state of California, in the CSU system, there was a polytechnic in the middle part of the state and the southern part of the state, but not in the northern part of the state. So what we wanted to do is create access in the northern part of the state, and then really also help out our other CSU campuses to offer some of those academic programs where students were dying to get into, but couldn't, and then where the workforce was saying, we need qualified employees. So that's kind of the why.
I see. And then how long a process has this been?
So it has been about a year and a half. And so let me think about this. Two falls ago, so fall of 2020, worked with our chancellor's office on receiving an invitation to do a self-study, to study our campus, to say, hey, could we be a polytechnic? What are our assets? What are our areas that we would need to build up to be able to transition to a polytechnic institution? We did that self-study in the beginning part of 2021, and then went through the Board of Trustees process, which is a lot of bureaucracy, but a really important part of bureaucracy where you go in front of the board and explain how we could be a polytechnic and all the different components of the university that would meet the needs of students, that sort of thing. So it's been about a year and a half process. We got that formal approval to become a polytechnic and change our name. That was sort of the action item in January of 2022. So that became official in January of 2022. Along with that comes standing up a lot of new academic programs, adding more support programs for students, creating more infrastructure, buildings, housing, that sort of thing. Along the way, as you may have heard, and this happened after the planning process, is that we got an investment from the state to support our efforts to transition to polytechnic. So the idea and the planning was there. People caught note of that, and then the state, the governor, with a lot of advocacy from the chancellor at the time, resulted in us getting $458 million to invest in our transition.
And for your students, for example, for students who started school there and it was still Humboldt State University, now switching over to Cal Poly Humboldt, what will that experience be like for them? What does it mean for the student?
Yeah, so what's neat about Cal Poly Humboldt is that, again, that rich hands-on experience. So what I aspire is that every student will have at least one really solid hands-on experience. If you've ever been out to Humboldt, we have the ocean, we have the forest, we have all sorts of outdoor experiences, marine lab, coral sea research vessel. And so what we aspire is that our students truly get their hands dirty. We do lots of partnerships with tribal nations. And so they get that rich and diverse experience while earning a degree that's going to readily prepare them for the workforce that people are going to want our graduates, and they're going to compete for our graduates. What they'll also get we're an institution that's deeply committed to sustainability, and that we're also being very intentional about incorporating traditional ecological knowledge into many of our degree programs. So what do our tribal nations, what have they known, and what can we incorporate into our degree programs? Applied fire science and management is a good example of that. So there's great wisdom from many tribal nations about addressing fire, climate change, those sorts of things. So what can we learn and incorporate into our degree programs, and therefore have students and graduates that can contribute in a unique way to the workforce?
Well, Jen Capps, Provost and Vice President for Academic Affairs at the newly renamed Cal Poly Humboldt, thanks for joining us and explaining what this change means.
Thank you. I appreciate the time.
Thanks again to all our guests, Rick Zechman, Sean Craig, and Jui Lafuente from the Marine Biology Lab at Cal Poly Humboldt, and Provost and Vice President for Academic Affairs, Jen Capps. You can learn more about Cal Poly Humboldt at humboldt.edu. Blue Dot is a production of North State Public Radio, a service of CAP Radio in beautiful and talented Northern California. If you missed or want to revisit an episode of Blue Dot, you can do just that on our website, mynspr.org. And while you're at it, subscribe to our podcast so you never miss an episode on our website, the NPR One app, or wherever you get your podcast groove on. Follow the show on Twitter and Instagram at Blue Dot NSPR. The theme music is by Matt Schultz. Blue Dot is engineered and produced by the maestro, Matt Fidler. I am Dave Schlom, and for all of us here, I remind you there that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot.